Shining Blind Like Me. It's Phil Parr coming into your homes and wherever you happen to be. And we're going over to the Eastern Time Zone. I don't even know where you are. Lawrence Uten here. How are you, sir? Welcome to Blind Like Me.
Thank you very much, Bill. I'm in Ottawa, Canada. Canada's national capital.
Man, you are. It's really cold up there.
Yeah, it's not too bad today. It's probably it's just below the freezing point today, but we got a good couple feet of snow hanging around. It's been snowing since the beginning of December. It hasn't stopped.
Now, you say below the freezing point. Is that below Fahrenheit freezing or Celsius?
Well, I'm below the freezing point of water.
Okay.
This is my concern because I can't put my boat out there, right?
You can't. No way. No fishing unless you drilled a hole in the ice.
We do.
Which you do. I know that I listen to, I'm a big Garrison Keillor fan, and I listen to Prairie Home Companion, and he's talking this time of year about houses out on the ice fishing down through the ice. I think a lot more drinking goes on than fishing at those.
some of those ice huts are certainly built for comfort, eh?
Well, yeah, recliners and couches and televisions and. They'll be watching the Super Bowl out there, I guess. So then.
Oh, yeah.
But you're not that kind of fisherman. You're a serious fisherman.
I think so, yeah.
Do you catch and release, or do you catch and eat?
Well, you know, there's a lot of good regulations and out there in terms of to maintain fish stocks, what size fish you should release. And it's usually all the bigger ones you should let go and just keep the smaller sort of pan-sized fish.
Uh-huh.
And by keeping the smaller ones, too, you avoid some of those older, more toxic fellas, you know, that have been around for way too long and have consumed all sorts of, you know, toxicity out of the environment that we put in there.
We did.
I don't want to eat them anyways.
Yeah. So the smaller ones, but you do catch and sometimes catch supper or catch some food.
Yeah.
You know, I could see nothing wrong with that. You know, we go to the supermarket and buy. Buy fish. We buy fish two or three times a month and broil it.
Like I say to my wife, you know, I bring home some fish and I say that paid for all my fishing equipment.
That would be the only way. I like orange roughy. I think is about my favorite. I think it's a kind of a, you know, it's
gorgeous.
I don't know where they catch those, but it seems to suit me fine. Well, we want to get into fishing. We want to talk about that. But first, let's talk about your life. You are not a young fella. How old are you?
44.
Well, you are a young fella compared to me.
Oh, thank you. I guess
everybody is 44. Now, what is your level of vision? You're totally blind now, aren't you?
Yeah, I have just a little bit of light perception in the very left edge of my left eye, but it's nothing functional, just night and day kind of thing. That's all.
But you didn't start out like that. You had some usable vision at one time.
I was registered blind when I was 8, but I was missing the very central vision, and that sort of spread out over the years, the dark spot in both eyes, sort of more or less the same timing in both eyes.
Uh-huh.
And by the time I was 21, 22, I was having difficulty, you know, in variable light conditions. So like going from inside at night to outdoors, or going from outside during the winter when it's really snowing bright into a building where it would be really dark. So I figured I had to do something. So I got myself a guide dog at that point.
Yeah.
I never had a cane or anything. I had a choice between getting a stick or a dog, and I got the dog.
But you never had vision enough to be considered normal or to drive a car or anything like that?
Not legally.
Oh, did you drive some?
I had
Go ahead. Statute of limitations has run out. My wife's a lawyer. We'll protect you. Tell us.
Well, we, you know, I was fortunate. My dad bought this old farmstead, and he bought a couple old Volkswagen Bugs, took the bodies off them, had some roll bars welded on. So by the time I was 5'6", I could drive a stick shift. Mind you, I had to sit on his lap sometimes, but you know, as soon as I could reach that gas pedal with the tip of my toe, I was out there on my own. And we burnt the hell out of first gear on all those things.
Is that right?
Never got out of first gear very often, but it was fun. And so I learned to drive, and I still drive. We have races up here every year for a fundraiser for the guide dog school. And it's about 30, 35 of us get out there on the kilometer, mile-long track. It's a clay track with concrete barricades, and we have celebrity co-pilots. It's the first guy to make it around the track 10 times, guy or gal. And
many
don't make it around more than once or twice.
That is wild. So you have someone. We talked to a guy who did this in New York named Lee H. Stone, who did this thing, and he did some recording from his car. You have a co-pilot that tells you which way to go, left, right, straight, and you're actually guiding the car.
I'm driving. They're automatics, and they're sort of, all the headlights and things are taken out of them, so there's no glass on the track. And it's a standing start, shotgun start, so, 30 cars lined up two abreast. You get your pole position by a draw, and you get your co-pilot by a draw, so you don't know where you're going to start with or who you're driving with until the day of the race. And then it's a, the green light goes, everyone starts or sort of starts, and off you go. And it's just mayhem.
And it's all blind people driving.
Yeah. All blind people who use the mirror guide dogs. And just to make sure it's fair, they duct tape the visors on all the helmets of the drivers. So even those who have a little bit of vision, that's
couldn't use that vision.
No.
Well, that's a wild thing. I want you to, if you get a chance, to record some of that maybe next year when it happens. But
I have, inside the car, there's not a lot of chit-chat going on. And other than the occasional left, right, straight, slow down, go, and crunch, there's not a lot of talking.
How many times have you done this?
5 times.
Have you been the winner?
I've come in fourth once, third twice, second once, and first once.
Well, that's pretty good out of, say, 30. You said, 35 participants?
Yeah, that's pretty... and quite often you have no idea who's ahead of you, right? Like last time I came in second, and, the car that was, just right in front of me came in first. I didn't know. If I had known, I would have, tried a little harder.
You'd have pulled around that guy if you'd known.
You have no idea.
That's pretty awesome. I don't know if I've thought a lot about that. I don't know if I'd have the nerve to do that. But now, as a child, you went to normal public, plain old regular school, or what did they do with you?
Yeah, I was lucky. I mean, in grade 3, they could have put me into the school for the blind, and they probably should have, I guess, by the rules of the day.
Yeah.
But my principal, for whatever reason, he had a disability himself. He had a sort of a disabled arm. I don't know what you'd call it. But he told me, look, Lawrence, as long as you can get along, you can stay. So basically that was, don't ask for too much.
Yeah.
Don't make a pain of yourself, and you can hang around,
Don't ask for too many special favors or too much attention, and you can hang around.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, believe me, in my thinking, you're better off. I might not have thought that 6 months ago, but I sure do now.
I learned to listen well,
Yeah. And you went through all 12 grades in a regular school with your regular buds, regular friends?
It was in the Scouts and the Ventures. And when I was graduated grade 12, they changed the laws in my province here to say that people with disabilities could actually attend their local schools.
You were already doing it.
I just finished.
Yeah, thank you for changing that law. I've already finished school now. Very good. How did you do lessons? Do you know Braille? Did you learn Braille as a boy?
No. No one took the time to bother teaching me Braille. And, we didn't have audio tapes, cassette tapes back then. I think they came out around grade 11, when I was in grade 11.
That would be at about 70, 19, yeah, somewhere around 70, 90,
72. 79, 80, yeah.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah. So, there was reel-to-reels, but there was no books on tape, nothing like that, and no one reading me anything, so I never learned to spell, put it that way. I just learned to be a good listener, that's all.
Thank God for F7. Jaws. If you know, Jaws F7 is a spell checker.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank God for the spell checker. I would not be, I couldn't type. I still get some tenses wrong and things wrong, but you can read. Well, you can read what I'm doing with Jaws. Are you? So you didn't learn Braille, and
no, I learned it later.
Oh, you did learn it later.
When okay, I was in university.
What did Mama? Did your mother or someone read your text, your books to you, or how did you? How did you learn?
I could see. With a 10 power X magnifier on one eye, and my nose pressed right to the paper.
I could
see print good enough to read normal print. But by the time I was in high school, I couldn't see those little fractions anymore or the decimal points in the math books. And I couldn't see the science, those tables, you know, the tables with the, you know, the O2,
yeah.
O2, little numbers. I couldn't see those little numbers. And I couldn't see the chalkboard at all, so I never couldn't follow lessons. But no, I could, you know. And remember, they still used, they didn't have good photocopiers. They used those blues,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Those fuzzy blue ink copies.
Couldn't see those at all.
No. So they gave the secretary a typewriter with a bigger head for bigger print, and she would type out my exams, right, my tests.
Uh-huh.
So the only thing I ever was accommodated on was the tests.
they liked you, and they made allowance for you. They wanted you there, or you wouldn't have been there. That principal was probably the best thing that ever happened to you was meeting that principal with a bad arm.
Oh yeah,
you
he was a fisherman too. He had a one-arm fishing rod with an automatic retrieving reel.
Yeah.
I saw him fishing one day on the river, and he was a fisherman as well.
I had taught a little radio Boy Scout radio class, and there was a one-arm boy in there. Boy, they only had use of one arm, and I didn't know that. No one had told me that.
Yeah.
And I was fussing at him. Boy, you sure are slow at running the board. And he said, well, try it with one arm yourself. And I said, well, try it without your eyesight. But boy, we'll talk about it. He and I became good friends. His name is Mark Christie. He worked for me a long time. Anyway, so you got through school and I ask everybody this question. Everybody that listens to this show knows what the next question is. At 18 years old, legally blind, you knew you were going to be blind someday. What did you think you could do to survive, make a living?
You know, I never thought I would be blind.
Oh, really?
And the doctors always told me the eyesight I had would be the eyesight I would have for the rest of my life.
Oh.
And, you know, if I had been a little more conscious about that and had sort of conducted self-tests or whatever, I would have realized that that's not the case. But, I was so busy living life, I never thought about it. You know?
I know. At 18, you don't think about anything.
No, and then I got a call. I was just finishing up high school. I got a call from the Blind Piano Tuners Union asking if I wanted to apprentice. And I never, I had studied piano a few years as a kid, but I had never met a blind person in my life, and let alone tune a piano. And I said, no, I said, I'm going to start a business. You know, I'm going to go to school and study business and start a business.
Yeah.
So I left Georgetown behind, a little town of 20,000 people. I saw my friends behind, my beagle, my hunting beagle, you know, sold my guns, packed up my fishing rods, and moved to the big city.
Of?
And I started college.
Moved to the big city of?
Toronto.
Toronto.
Toronto, Ontario. Yeah, 3 million people now.
Well, it is a big city.
Yeah, it was about 2 million then, and 2.5.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good size. Ended up working for this company right downtown. Doing with his little cafeterias and smoke shops and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And did that for 6 months. And then in August, the president asked me if I wanted to do a management trainee program. And I was just turned 19, I think. And I said, no.
No.
I said, I want to go to college.
Oh.
And I was already enrolled. And he said to me, good for you.
Did he?
Yeah, he said, you go to college.
You go to
better
college.
Better for you.
So you did. What did you study? What did you want to, what did you think?
Well, you know, I was enrolled in business admin in August at this college, local college, and I realized that the bottom line just wasn't that important to me after working in business for the last 6 months. I was more concerned with people and having the opportunity to work. So I switched right at the last minute to vocational rehabilitation.
Okay.
And I studied, and I got a diploma in voc rehab after 2 years of college. And then they told me I couldn't be a vocational counselor because I couldn't see the clients, you know, and that was mostly sheltered workshops and things where you had to observe these people, you know, putting 12 washers in a little baggie kind of thing, right? So they said you should go to university, become a counselor, and get a university degree, and become a counselor then. So I did. And I did four more years in university, and I studied psychology and sociology. And then I got out of that, and they told me I still couldn't be a counselor because I only had an undergraduate degree.
Huh.
I needed a master's, right?
So you went back and got a master's,
yeah. But I got a master's in environmental studies, and I studied the built environment and how people with disabilities fit into the environments we build and how we can build better environments. And I spent a year living in Sweden as part of that as a guest lecturer.
Wow.
Studying their environmental accommodation strategies over there. And that was my thesis, the Swedish-Canadian comparison, you know, because they're very innovative people over there. You know, they might be socialists, but they're got lots of innovation, lots of, I think they got the highest number of patents per capita in the world.
And they party a lot, from what I've heard.
They're known to drink beer, yeah.
I knew a lady that was raised in Sweden. She said they have a lot of national holidays and they do a lot of parties. So studying the environments we build and how handicapped people fit into them. Am I right?
Exactly.
That's
so
wild.
Not social work, but you know, the physical sort of fitting in, and I guess policy and the whole nine yards as well, but more from the physical perspective and others as well, you know. But
That is I've never thought of that or never that was that a program you designed or is there actually a college degree you can get in that or was this just something you thought of or
I put it together myself and I just took courses in social science, labor studies, psychology and the environment and sociology, psychology, environmental psychology, all those types of courses, counseling again. And I started a company when I finished high school and I moved back from Sweden, finished university, moved back from Sweden.
Yeah.
I moved to Ottawa, left Toronto, moved to Ottawa. I started a company called Integrated Employment Consulting Services. And, it was just in the early 90s then. And the whole 80s was all this affirmative action, right, where everyone was told to hire people with disabilities.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And my motto for my company was bridging the quality of working life needs of people with disabilities with the productivity requirements of employers.
Good.
Because I figured there was a lot of people who were unhappy in the workplace because they weren't getting anything to do. And there was a lot of managers who were unhappy with their employees because they weren't productive.
Yeah.
So I started this consulting company, had some really interesting clients, even a guy, blind guy who worked at our satellite company here in Canada and a bunch of other people. And then they started all that recession came and it was all about downsizing, remember?
Yeah.
And it was about doing less, doing more with less and getting rid of the dead wood. And all the managers just fired these people with disabilities out the door. It was crazy. So my consulting, all my potential clients were now unemployed.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's horrible, it was just horrible. So I ended up working in the government on some big national strategies for the integration of people with disabilities. It was a $158 million five-year initiative. And
wow.
And they said, look, come and work with us on this five-year initiative, and you'll learn, you can maybe make a difference this way. And so I did. And I did that for, a number of years and went on from there.
Lawrence, yeah. No conformist, you.
No.
You plowed.
Timing's not always the best.
You plowed your own ground. I don't want to be a piano tuner. I'm going to college. I don't want your stinking, your silly under management job. I'm going to college, and you did, and you were successful.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun at university. I'll tell you, a lot of fun. I mean, I took full course loads. I never got A's. I got a couple B's, but I got a lot of C pluses, and that's okay.
It's okay. Long as you pass. Yeah. That's all that matters.
That's it. That's it.
They don't ask you by how much you passed. You passed. That's the important, All right. So now you've got 8 years of college. Who paid for all this college? Would you get grants or?
I got some student grants and I got some loans that took me a while to pay off. And I worked part-time in a group home.
Yeah.
Where there was 10 men with emotional disabilities and developmental delay. They grew up in an institution, actually.
Yeah.
And then they closed the institution. And these were the last, 10 guys to come out of this institution. No one wanted them. So they built this group home. Well, they bought a group home, a big house.
Yeah.
And they put these guys, and I worked there for 4 or 5 years, every 2-3 nights a week and on the weekends. And but eventually I had to go because I couldn't see enough anymore, and I almost got hit by a jam jar once. It was some guy, was one of the guys was a little excited and threw this big economy-sized jar of jam, came flying out the kitchen door. Yeah. It went right by my head and smashed on the wall in the hallway. And I figured that was my time to leave. So, he wasn't aiming for me, but, you know.
Well, now, this was while you were going to university or after?
Yeah,
or
while I was going.
So
yeah.
You wrote, but then you ended up writing a thesis about this very sort of behavior.
I wrote a thesis in for my undergraduate, I wrote a thesis called Etiquette in Dealing with the Blind.
Oh.
And what it was is... you know, there was a lot of people wondering, oh, how do you interact with people? You know, what's polite, what's rude, what's too much help, what's not enough help? So I developed these multiple choice questions. I gave them out to all the blind people I knew, and I took wherever they were, you know, they took their answers, and that was the right answer. And then I gave the questions to a bunch of people who worked for the Canadian National Institute for the Blind, who were sort of there to help blind people.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at their scores, and then I gave it to a bunch of university students, and I looked at their scores, and I gave them to a bunch of the just general public. And it was interesting, you know, how they each scored compared to the to what the blind people thought was the right thing. I found that the general public would usually offer a little bit more help than the blind people wanted. And the people who worked at the Institute for the Blind offered a little bit less help than what the blind people wanted.
It's hard to determine even yourself how much help you want, how much, you know. I am of the opinion that if somebody sighted offers to do it and they're around, by God, I'll let them. I got no problem with help, with getting help. I can cut up a steak, but if you want to cut it up for me, buddy, get after it.
Exactly. I mean, if there's Braille on the elevator buttons and someone says, hey, can I push a button for you? You know, sure.
I say this. 7. Let's go to, you know.
Yeah, why not?
You know, if we're in a restaurant, somebody wants to, I can cut up a steak, and I don't have to prove every time I go to a restaurant that I can cut up a steak. I already know I know how. So if Mama says, Phil, you want me to cut that? Yeah, because she can cut it in 30 seconds, whereas it'd take me 3 years, you know.
Mm-hmm. So you end up eating all the fat.
That's right. That's exactly right. I take all the help I can get. Anyway.
Yeah.
So did you ever get a real job? I hope not.
Well, I've been working in the government for 15 years.
Yeah.
I've done a bunch of different stuff in the government. After I did that disability initiative for 5 years, I worked in the area of international trade, and I did that for 6 years. So I was down with NAFTA and the World WTO and traveling around to Washington and Mexico and Geneva and stuff.
Really?
And that was fun. Yeah, that was really interesting, all that trade negotiation stuff and pretty stressful stuff. And then I got into the whole .com business, you know, and the whole high tech thing. And I did that Web for All. That came out of that whole. I did that for the last 5 years or so. And I did, you know, where I built. We wanted to make Canada the most connected nation in the world, and we did for a number of years. And to make sure that people with literacy issues and disabilities could participate in the digital economy and all that stuff, I put together this package of software and hardware. And had it configurable with that smart card so that you could just save your preferences on a little plastic card, go to any public workstation, just swipe your card, and the computer would configure itself to exactly how you wanted it to be.
I wasn't aware of that.
And when you pull your card out, then it just goes back to being a regular little computer, right?
So you put your card where now? You put it in...
A little card reader that we hooked up to the USB device.
Okay, yeah. All right, now, it wanted to make Canada the most accessible nation in the world for your area was making websites, government websites, accessible to blind people.
Well, not so much the websites. I mean, we were looking at, I headed up a committee on that for the federal government for a few years as well, on accessible web design.
Yeah.
But I also, it was just, you know, what do you get when you walk into a library or a public school or a community center or any of those places? where, you know, public computers were sitting and servicing the public, right? And making sure all those computers could be accessed by everyone.
Okay.
And there's a lot of people, you know, with literacy challenges, with different types of disabilities, who really, you know, never thought they'd ever use a computer.
Yeah.
But once they sit in front of it and you get it talking, or you get a little bit, you know, a little bit straightforward interface, and, you know, some spell check and other things on there, and, you know, next thing you know, they're writing their first friggin' letter.
So you had talking, you had software, speech software on many, many computers.
Yeah, I set up over 1,000 across Canada in public centers, yeah.
And you had a little card that you came in and stuck this in your card reader, and immediately JAWS would come on or what, some to speaking?
Yeah, we did it with JAWS and GW Micro, Zoom Text, and a bunch of others. We even had the IBM product in their homepage reader. And then we had a whole bunch of other things for screen readers, e-readers, things like that for disability, for dyslexia, learning disabilities, on-screen keyboards, roller balls, things like that. Yeah, real variety of hardware and software. Didn't cost a lot. We got, because we were doing it on 1,000 computers, we were able to get some pretty good prices.
Sure. And they could go into a library, pick their card in, and the computer would set itself up like they. When they left, it would go back to the normal way a sighted, fully sighted person wanted.
Yeah.
That is is such a wonderful idea. I never thought of it.
No one ever knew what your disability was. If you didn't show, you know, unless they came and snooped around while you're working, they wouldn't really know.
So you're still employed by the government. You're still a government employee.
Yeah.
Are you at work now?
No, I snuck off.
You snuck away to do this interview with the
silly
blind guy. Yeah. All right. Well, we're about half in. If we don't start talking about fishing, we're not going to get to. Obviously, your interest in fishing manifested itself as a young fella, as a young boy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right from day one. We had that remember I told you about that little property we had.
Yeah.
My dad put a pond in there. We put some fish in there, and I was literally fishing with a cane pole.
Yeah, which ain't. I've done some cane pole fishing, which is not a bad way to fish. I used to buy a little child's rod and reel so it was short and I could feel the end moving and fish like that, you know, a little children's rod and reel. Anyway, so you had brothers and sisters, I guess, from the way you talked.
Bunch of brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bunch of brothers, and y'all ran hard and played hard and drove cars and fished and just had a big time.
Yeah,
when you were a kid. That's great. That is so great. All right, and fishing became a part of your life when you were a youngster, and you still do it. And from what I read yesterday, you have a pretty good-sized fishing boat. So let's get into that. Tell us about that.
Well, what I did is, you know, after moving to the city, I sort of, and you know, becoming functionally blind, right, I sort of gave up many of my outdoor hobbies. You know, it's hard when you live in the middle of a big city anyways.
Yeah, it would be.
And you're going to school and you're working all the time. But it never was that far away. But now that I've sort of gotten, you know, where I want to be in life a little bit, and, you know, career's going pretty good, and kids are getting a little older, I started turning what I learned over the last number of years towards my old hobbies, right?
Yeah.
So I said, well, let's, you know, I always had a boat. Always had a boat. And I said, but, you know, I said, I miss driving my own boat. And you can legally drive a boat. You can get a little, what we need here in Canada is a pleasure boat operator certificate. I got mine. Uh-huh. And it's not against the law. I mean, blind people sail boats, right?
Yeah.
And so I got this guy. He sells these porta boats. They're made in California. He distributes them in Ontario. And he said, and they weigh about 70 pounds, 12 feet long. They fold up flat like a surfboard. And you just unfold and pop the seats in, and you got a 70-pound, 12-foot rowboat.
Really?
And then, so he lent me one of those. And then Minn Kota, you know, the Johnson outdoor people, they gave me one of those little electric motors to put on the back of it, nice and quiet. And then I got a bunch of, just did research on the internet, and I looked at what's out there for sonar and compasses, navigation, and, you know, avoiding banging into things. Those are the sort of...
Well, I can see both.
So I looked, and so I, you know, and I'd been working with VisuAid HumanWare up here in Canada on, you know, helping them, giving them feedback over the years on their GPS system, their tracker, and they created that sort of free mode which allowed you to sort of get off the map and create points of interest and navigate between points of interest. And I know, you know, Sendero Group, they did it too with their breadcrumb feature, and that's a fine tool as well. But both those systems you can use in a boat, right? You create, you go out with someone who's sighted on a little, you know, your little lake there, whatever, where you, you know, you fish, you know, it's, you don't need a big body of water, preferably not. And you create a few, you know, get off the dock maybe 20, 30 feet, create your first point of interest on the GPS, and then you go with your buddy and you find a few fishing spots, you know.
And you, and you put those in his, put those in his points of interest.
Points of interest, yeah. And then maybe make a little tactile map of the whole lake so you know where your points of interest are and you know your north position on that. So you always have a good idea where you are on the body of water, right? And then, so that was the navigation with the compass and the GPS. That did pretty good on the navigation. And then I found some of these mini guides and some of these handheld, you know, sonar systems they have for the blind people to use when they're walking around.
Yeah.
I know no one uses them. Not many people use them. But they, but I put them on the front of the boat. I Velcroed them to the front of this boat. And I just ran some the wires back to a little set of computer speakers. So I had, and I just taped the speakers onto the middle seat. So I have left and right sonar. And when they both fire off, I know there's something right in front of me. But I know, too, you know, and there's something on the left speaker's beeping, and the right one's when something's on the starboard side. And I, so I can always detect if there's anything in front of me, like a dock or a canoe or another boat, you know, as long as it's within, I'd say I can get range on flat water up to about 50 feet in front of me.
So if there's something 50 feet in front of you, these two sonars are going to go make noise.
Yeah, and first slowly they'll make noise and then more and more. And then for real close-up stuff, like when I'm getting close to a dock or I want to hook up with another boat, I have these automobile reverse sensors. They're really cheap now, right? And I can, you can get them for $75, a sensor with a little beeper on it. And I just Velcro that to the front, and I hook it to my battery that I'm running my Minn Kota off of. And that gives me three different types of beep tones at 8 feet, 4 feet, and 2 feet. So I can, you know, I have that sort of in-close coverage as well.
Oh, nice, I don't know about these backup sensors now. They that's what they give you is 8 feet, 4 feet, and 2 feet. So they give you three different tones?
Three different sort of rates of beeping. So it starts off beep, 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 and then beep, 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 and then beep, 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 you know?
That's 8, 4, and that is wonderful.
Yeah, so that's,
I didn't know about it.
Main stuff. You know, you can get that off the internet really relatively cheap. And those work, that, and they were made for outdoor use, so you don't have to worry about getting them wet. And then I, I've been working with this company, well, Lowrance. They make fish finders. So we're working on trying to get that Lowrance fish finder to give me some depth information to start with, because I want to know what's underneath the boat.
Sure.
I want to know when those drop-offs are. And when.
So we want that to talk. It just does it visually.
Well, you can get a Lowrance fish finder and some of the other companies as well.
Yeah.
And they have, like, shallow water alerts, so you can set that. So if I'm in water less than 3 feet, it'll send off a little audio alarm.
Yeah.
Or it'll give you a deep water alert, or it'll give you a big fish alert. But I want a little bit more than that so I can get a better understanding of what's down there, and I want that to talk.
Yeah.
So I'm working with some guys, a company in Newfoundland here. They're working on something for me. And there's another guy in Australia. He's done something as well around this sort of thing. And I'm going to try that out this year. And so it just keeps going. So I've done all this with my little plastic boat, right, the porta boat.
Okay, so you're out with these Velcro things strapped to the front of your boat, and your little speakers laying in the seat, and you can hear left and right and straight in front of you, 8, 4, and 2 feet. And so you're trucking along with this quiet little electric motor making no noise.
Just, no noise.
Just barely. All you can hear is the only sound you hear is it pushing you through the water.
You just hear a little bit of water slapping the front of the hull of the boat, you know, and it's really soft because it's a plastic boat, so it's not like an aluminum boat. It's not, you know, bing, bing, bing like a tin can.
That is the wildest thing I've ever heard in my life. And you got your GPS system, and so you got your point of interest, and you're going north, and your point of interest is west, so you turn left and put in your point of interest, and it tells you 3 feet or 35 feet. Does it talk? I mean, does it say?
It says, you know, when you're pointing for a point of interest, it says 7 degrees, 42 meters.
Okay.
0 degrees, 40 meters.
Okay.
So every 10 seconds, it gives you a heading based on 0 degrees is straight in front of you, and, you know, 355 is a little to the left, and 5 is a little to the right, you know?
Yeah.
So every 10 seconds, it gives you the degrees, and then it also tells you how many meters you are away, or yards you are away from your point. And then when you arrive, it says, voila, you've arrived, and you throw your anchor out and start fishing.
That is the wildest thing out in a boat. I'd never... You know, I'm not a boat person, so I knew about this stuff, but I just can't, I can just imagine you with all this stuff Velcroed on your boat. All right, you're gonna, I love it, Lawrence, man. It's just.
Takes a few batteries.
Man.
You want to carry a couple extra with you, too.
That's figuring out you want to do something, so you figured out how to do it.
Yep. Why not? I mean, I'm not
breaking any
land speed records out there, water records. You know, I'm just putting around in my little bodies. Now, what I wanted to do next is, I realized that, you know, every time I unfold my boat and fold it up, and it's a really portable boat, I'm getting more and more intricate with my electronics, right? And I'm getting really sophisticated now, and I'm really starting to push the envelope, and it's a little much for my little plastic boat because it sort of defeats the purpose.
You want
a
boat that you can put this stuff on permanently and leave it, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I bought myself a 20-foot fiberglass catamaran. It's a power catamaran. It's kind of like the tunnel hull design. I did a lot of research on this, and these catamaran boats, they're used on the coast a lot, and they're meant so you can run in any size water. So that means if, you know, I'm not going to run on the ocean with it, well, maybe someday, but here on the bigger lakes, you know, I could be driving that thing, and if another boat goes by me and the wake, you know, a big wake comes off the back of the boat and I hit it, I'm not going to flip over, you know, because this thing's designed to take that sort of no problem. Mind you, you know, it'll do 45 miles an hour. I'm not going to be driving it by myself because that would just be ludicrous.
No, you're not. Why not?
Well, you know, I don't have the sonar that can reach out that far ahead. Right? I mean, my sonar can reach out 50 feet, but at 45 miles an hour, I figure that's about 5 seconds too late.
Wait a minute. You're not going to go 45 miles. Are you wanting to use the regular outboard motor that it has, or you want to use your electric motor?
No, not on this one. It's going to have we're putting a regular outboard motor.
A regular.
On. It'll have an electric motor.
One of those big noisy.
Well, they're quieter. Yeah, they're quieter now.
Get out of
here. They're definitely noisy.
I don't want
that.
But
then I've got more GPS. I've got better GPS. And these new GPS systems, Phil, it's amazing. They get them, and they have these little, what they call them, tracks, right? And this is what the fishermen are using, the boaters are using. You can create a track, or it can actually create a track for you on a body of water. You say, I'm here, I want to go there. And it'll create you the best, safest route to get there.
Really?
And then you just have to follow the buoy line, right? You're marked on the display with the GPS system that's built into it, and you just sort of keep your dot along the row of dots. And I'm working with a company, and they're going to make me a little navigator that'll give me audio feedback, so I can keep my gas-powered, you know, high-speed sort of fishing boat on that line of dots, so I can get from one place to the other.
Okay.
Now, I'm working with another university here, and they're working on some more elaborate sensors that are going to reach out a little bit further and give me some more feedback that way, so I'll know where the bodies land are and other
obstacles. So now you're not happy with your little sonar and your quiet little motor. Now we want to go fat. You'll want to fly a damn airplane pretty soon. You know, you won't be happy with the, you know, this is going to be like the guy that stopped me and four other blind guys driving a car, and he let us all go, and I saw him later and asked him, I've told this story before, I saw him later and asked him, I said, why didn't you take us in? He said, hell, they would have laughed me. I said, I'd have been the laughing stock of the police station. No game warden in the world is going to arrest you because, hey, a blind guy driving, yeah, sure, you know, then it's not going to happen.
Well, I'll have a sighted fishing buddy with me, you know, but I want to be the captain.
Well, yeah.
Why can't I be the captain,
you
right?
Can. You can, Captain.
Yeah. I will be.
In fact, that's what we'll call you from now on the rest of the program, Captain Lawrence.
That sounds good. I love it.
I thought you would. All right, let's demonstrate. If you got them, you got your sonar things there. Give us a little, pull your speaker up and turn it up good and loud. And let's see if we can hear some of these things that you would hear left and right. And have you got the backup deal there? You got it also?
Well, I don't got the backup one because I don't have the car battery here at my desk.
But why not? I don't know why not.
This one here is made by Bat Technologies, Bay Advanced Technology.
Uh-huh.
And it's, let me just turn the speaker up a little more.
Okay.
So that's ranging.
That means you're too far to the right.
Yeah.
See, there's something in front of you on the right.
The lower notes means you're something's close. And then when it goes from the high pitches, it's further away, right?
Okay.
So now I'm staring down the room there about 10, 15 feet, and it's bouncing off the end wall there, down way down at the end of the end of the room. And that's the floor. It's getting closer. Now I'm pointing straight below at the floor. So that's that unit, and that's pretty good because it gives you a lot of different audio feedback.
It does.
But a lot of good variation in audio, but not the same range as the mini guide. The mini guide is my favorite. It's the one I strap onto the front of the boat. This one here, the Bat Technology, I keep in my pocket of my fishing vest.
Okay.
That way I can tell when I'm getting close to a dock, or I can just scan around, you know.
Uh-huh.
If I think there's something close by, I can scan around with that one and sort of try to
and see where
it is. Now, the mini guide, I have two of these, and they're really tiny, and they've got they vibrate, but you can also plug a speaker in the back, and I'll just turn it on here, and I'll set it for 4 meters.
Okay.
You can set it up to 8 meters, and they say 8 meters, but I find on the water, because the water's glassy, you get more, because it bounces off the water, I think. So hang on. That's the 4 meters there. So that's 4 meters there. So now it's looking up on my ceiling.
Let me hear it just a second.
That's something getting closer, closer, closer.
Further away. It gets faster when it gets closer.
Yeah, exactly. So then there's something about 15 feet away.
Yeah.
And it's gone again.
Because you're in a room and you're waving it around at the wall right now,
That's all I'm doing, yeah.
That is
wild. Now, I got
this
compass here. This is made in Australia. This is a Robotron compass. Now, this one speaks Spanish and English.
Oh.
They've got a new version that's out now. Let me just see.
Southeast.
Little Australian accent saying southeast, eh?
North. Yeah.
North.
Yeah. North.
Yeah.
Because, you know, with the GPS, right, the GPS will only tell you which way you're pointing once you start moving.
Oh.
It can't tell you you can tell you where you are, but it has no idea which way you're pointing. So you need the compass to tell you which way you're pointing. And then once you got your direction set, then you start the motor and you start moving. And then after about 10 feet or so, 15 feet, the GPS will give you enough information to give you course direction.
But see, this is the equivalent of, and all us blind guys do it. You may not because you got a little sight. All of us blind guys click our mouths, go, or clap your hands so you can hear that echo bouncing off so you won't run into the mailbox. So this is the moral equivalent of that.
Yeah, pretty much. It's just using sonar, military sonar, in a little handheld device, and it's just bouncing sound signals off things and picking it up again.
And you're waving it around to see where you are, if there's anything around that you could possibly run into.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. That's just so great.
Well, remember, there's not, I mean, some lakes are busier than others, and you got to pick and choose, right? But up here in Canada, there's a lot of lakes, and not many of them are that, you know, you can quite often find yourself, you're the only boat on the water, so and you're the only thing on the water, so it's not like a busy sidewalk.
Well, and a big motor, you're going to hear that sucker a long way away. You're going to hear him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the kayaks and the canoes I always want to be conscious of, you know. So but with my little plastic boat, I can pick those up well beforehand. And
some guy holler, "How you doing?" You know.
Yeah.
I'm thinking
maybe what I'll do is put one of those, you know, those little reverse beepers they have on vehicles. You know, beep beep.
Yeah.
I might put one on the front of my boat.
Why not?
There's no way of telling anyone that you're coming, right?
Yeah.
But if I have a little reverse beeper, people know that means get out of the way.
Well, it reminds me of the joke about the fat guy standing in line, the kid behind him, and the fat guy's cell phone went off, and the kid said, "Watch out, Mom, I think he's going to back up," you know. Anyway, so that's what you need on the front of your boat.
That's what I need. Yeah.
It is. It's exactly what you need. Now
that's the fun I'm having on that website and the blindfishingboat.com website. So, but I have to tell you, what I think is more relevant to a lot of people is there's a ton of fishing gear out there. There's a ton of different types of fish to fish for. And there's a ton of, a million ways to try to catch them, right? And all this fishing gear is designed first and foremost to catch the fisherman, the fisher, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, it's designed to get you to buy it. Now, what works, if you don't have sight, what's the best stuff you should waste your money on? You know, I mean, well, spend your money on, sorry. And you don't, I have to admit, I've purchased stuff that's, you know, sitting in my basement and I haven't used for, you know, once, and then I realized that was a big mistake.
Yeah.
I've tried fishing, you know, different ways and for different types of fish, and I realized, well, you know, that's not fun.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know, most fishers, they don't fish for every fish using all the equipment because no one has the time or the money to do it anyways, unless you're retired and really rich. You don't have time. So you get good at fishing certain for certain fish and using certain techniques, and uh-huh. you just get good at doing it that way. So I'm writing about those different types of fishing techniques and the types of gear you'd use that works well for people with outside or really limited sight. Uh-huh.
Now, this is on the website?
It's on the website, yeah. And I'd love if people would share their stories with me, right. And I'll put them up there, you know. Leave some comments, send me some emails. I'd be happy to put that on there.
Okay, passed that website address awful quick now. Go back and revisit that for me. Tell me that again. How do you get there?
It's www, which I don't think you have to do anymore.
No, you don't have to do that anymore.
It's just blindfishingboat.com.
All one word. Blindfishingboat?
Yep.
Blindfishingboat.com.
Yes, sir.
And what will you find when you get there? When it opens up, I guess it is completely blind friendly, right?
Oh, yeah. And there's four skip tags there right at the beginning. So you can skip to the content. Now, the content is the five most recent posts that I've put up, the five most recent reports. That's the content. Then there's about six, seven different little static pages you can skip to, you know, home page, disclaimer, sponsorship, contact me, you know, about the boat, about boat two, stuff like that never changes, right?
All right.
Then there's a skip to categories, which is organizes all the reports like fishing trips, techniques, all that, you know, different sorts of how the reports are organized. So you can just click on one of those links and it'll show you all my fishing trip reports.
Okay.
Or all my how to tie fishing knots with no diagrams or, you know, other things like that. And then there's the archives, which go by date and by month. And then you can drill down by month and find those same reports, only organized by month.
Do you have others posting? Are you're the only one so far that's posted, or do you have some other folks helping you?
No, just me so far, you know, I haven't been up at this, you know, the website's just sort of recent, but I've been writing for to get stuff on there. So I've got about, 30, I don't know how many reports are on there, but there's a, you know, a whole year's worth of reports. There's all the test reports from last year's trials on the porta boat. There's all my fishing trip reports are on there and a bunch of other stuff. And I'm going to keep adding to it, and I'd love for other people to send me stuff, you know, stuff that they know works well and tricks on how to fish as a person without sight or with limited sight. It'd be fantastic. And I'm already getting, you know, emails from people who are losing their sight or family members of people who are losing their sight saying, you know, my husband just had to sell his $50,000 Ranger bass boat because he's lost his eyesight and he's sitting at home now all depressed. And I came across your website and it's fantastic. And, you know, and they, questions like that. They want to know how to, you know, what can my husband do? Can he use a computer? How do you do this? How do you write this? You know, if you're blind, kind of thing. You know, little simple things like that, right?
I was thinking this would really be maybe a good thing for ACB Radio to do would be do a fishing show for blind people. Nobody's done that.
A lot of fun. Yeah.
Nobody's done that. Maybe let's think about that and talk to the powers that be. I'm not in charge over there. I don't know who is. It's kind of a done by committee. But maybe we can work something out. That would sure be nice because you couldn't be the only one. There's got to be, like you said, guys who have lost their sight and think, well, hell, I'll never be able to fish again because I can't see. Well, we know that's wrong, you know, but they don't.
Yeah, they know that, and there's probably other. And you're right. There's guys who've developed very highly, defined techniques of catching certain fish that I'd love to hear about, and they're out there, and you know, share the knowledge. You don't have to tell us where you're catching those fish.
Or
where your hot spots.
We'd love for you to, but let me ask you this: Do different baits? Do they really make that much difference?
People fish live bait, but I tell you, you can catch a lot of stuff on those little rubber worms, eh? A lot of stuff. And these spinner baits, that's fantastic. Spinner baits are, I think they're a heaven sent fishing.
You think that's the thing to use is a spinner bait?
For certain types of fish it is, for sure. But then, you know, sometimes I go fishing for carp, and, you know, they're ugly, big, ugly fish, but when you can catch 20, 30, 40 you know, fish in a day, and they're all between the, you know, 10 and 40 pounds, you're exhausted by the end of the day just catching these things and letting them go.
Well, you would be. Now, when
catching them little balls of dough kind of thing, you know?
Well, that's what we use was little bread balls. Do you, when you catch a fish, do you remove the hook from that fish yourself?
Yeah, I do. And it's always a little bit challenging because you never know what's on the end of the line, right? So you got to
really
sort of take it slow. You know, I have big nets. Big nets, get it into the net. I don't lift it out of the water because then it starts thrashing out. I get it in the net, keep it in the water, but then I sort of come up on it. I figure out where the head is and get behind it. And then
you've still got something on it. You've got that hook in it, so you can follow that lead to the head.
Yeah, and if it depends how many hooks you got on there or how many teeth that fish may have, you might want to start at the other end, eh?
Oh.
You know, once it's in the net and sort of get it.
But you've got the guy by something. I mean, you've got an advantage because you've got a dog leash on him. You've got him hooked.
Mm-hmm. He ain't going anywhere.
That would still be a little scary, and I'm sure you've gotten some, there have been some mishaps.
You've talked to the sighted fishers, and they all got stories of getting their fingers in the gills and gill raked and hooked, you know, or the just as they're trying to release the hook, the fish starts thrashing around, and those treble hooks dig into their hand, and they got a thrashing fish hooked to their hand. I mean, it could be really painful if you're not careful.
Oh, it could be, and it happens to you, too.
It hasn't happened to me. I'm really careful.
Yeah, well, it's the same.
So far, knock on wood.
Well, it's the same thing as people ask me. I got a wood shop full of saws, and people ask me, well, you know, how do you keep from cutting your fingers? Because I don't want to cut myself. I'm careful, really careful.
Yeah, just be careful. Think about what you're doing. That's all. You know, it's when they get careless. That's when people make the mistakes.
And sighted people may get more careless than blind people because they're not as because they can at least see what's on the end of that. What's in that net and what's going on, whereas you can't.
That's right. You've got to be more concentrated. Sighted people, I think, get distracted, you know? They kind of decide to look at that big, beautiful fish, and they just want to grab it. And
So my thing would be I might just take some snips and cut the line and wrap the net around him and go on. I guess not. You want to take the hook out.
Sometimes, you know, that fish gets hooked so badly, you know, it's way down deep inside. But they have little things like they spread the jaws. So if it's a toothy fish, you can spread the jaws, and then you can get your needle nose pliers and run it down the line and sort of get that hook out, hopefully.
Can you put that jaw spreader in a fish's mouth? Have you done that?
Yeah.
Really?
It's got rubber tips, so it doesn't hurt the mouth. You know, you put rubber ends on it,
And you can figure out where the hook is and get it out and either release him or decide you're going to keep him or whatever you decide you want to do. You have a wife and children.
Yes.
What does Mama think about all this? What does she...
Well, she's okay. She comes out in the boat. She loves coming out in the boat with me sometimes. But, you know, with the, you know, the smaller kids, they get a little bored sometimes on, you know, the real small ones and... The older ones, they like to fish, but they want, you know, they want to catch fish. So, you know, I do a lot of, you know, I've done a lot of pan fish where, you know, you're going to get caught in a right off the dock, right?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, kids are going to catch lots of nibbles on the end of the rod and done that for a number of years. But you know, because of these forums on the internet, I was fortunate. I hooked into a good forum here in Eastern Ontario, and there's a lot of good fishermen and a lot of enthusiastic fishermen.
Uh-huh.
So I'm meeting people and getting to go out fishing for species and on little adventures with different people, and that's really fun.
There's a lot of guys that want to go with you. That are interested in going on a little fishing trip with
of guys like to go fishing. They like to go fishing with serious fishermen, you know, people who are serious about it like they are.
And once they get over the fact that you're blind, once that note no longer is the most important thing about you, then everything's okay.
Well, you know, there's always that three-stage thing, right? The first step is like, oh, my God, he's blind.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is, you know, they forget about you being blind.
Yeah.
And that's when it gets dangerous.
Yeah.
You have to be really attentive because they're going to forget you're blind, they're leaving you on the dock, and you're going to walk off the dock or something. And then there's the third stage, you know, where they say, oh, that's just Lawrence, he's blind.
Right? Yeah.
It all goes with the package.
I like when they get when the most important thing about me is not that I'm blind. I like when you get them past that, then you have a chance to make a friend. You know, you got a shot.
Then they still think about it, but they know what to think about and not, you know. Yeah, exactly. And that's nice when you get to. And I'm working with some guides, you know, and I'm trying to get guides to that level as well. So and I'm writing about their guiding services and so on, so they can maybe, you know, once I get them trained up, maybe other people, fishers without sight, will take advantage of my hard work.
And every trip that you do, you come home and write a little something about it and put it up on the website so you're keeping it really a fishing journal, more or less.
It's kind of like a blog, except, you know, I don't talk about what I'm wearing this morning when I get up.
Oh, nobody cares. Yeah. How would someone go about posting on your website? Do they need to?
They can leave comments. They can leave comments on any of my articles, and their comments can be as long as they want.
Okay, so that's already built in the website.
Yeah, and then I'll approve the comments, and, you know, they'll go up there. Or they can just send me an email to info@blindfishingboat.com. And I'll put it up myself, and I'll credit them for the, you know, they'll get full credit for the article, and I'll put it in the right category. Or if they just have questions, they can send me questions, and I'll answer the questions. And
info at blindfishingboat.com.
Yes, sir.
Or just blindfishingboat.com is the way you get to the website.
Yeah.
All right. What a thing. We've killed an hour, Captain.
Hey, that went quick, eh?
It always does. It always when you get to really talking and exchanging ideas, it just drifts by. I'm going to run this weekend, and let's see if we can't generate some interest. And I want to do some thinking about maybe a fishing show, maybe get somebody that's interested in fishing to kind of, because it's always better if you have someone to play off of, someone to be your kind of, not straight man, but someone, you know, to do the show with you. Let me do some thinking about that, and I swear I'll be back in touch. I promise you.
Hey, that sounds good, Joel. I think it'd be great to reach out. You know, there's a lot of good hobbies out there, and with the technology now, there's no reason why we can't do some of these things, right?
Man, you are a very gentle, wonderful soul, and we're all better off. We're all better off having you around. I believe that.
And you too, sir.
I've never met you, but I will someday. Okay.
Because you're going to come up here and go fishing someday,
I got to.
I
guess I got to now, don't I?
Lawrence, come up. I'll organize something. It'll be a hoot.
Lawrence Utenier, thank you, sir, and I'll talk to you in a day or two.
All righty, Phil.
Bye-bye.
Hey,
what's
going on?
I'm
going
to run it this Saturday.
That's good.
Thanks, sir. Bye-bye.
Then actually, we didn't run it this Saturday, so we ran it. We're going to run it this Saturday. What a nice fellow. Genuine, sincere person. He just enjoyed. I called him back. He said, "You know, I just felt good about the interview, and it was nice. Nice to interview. Boy, it's the ones that'll talk are wonderful." And he was a good talker, knew his subject well, and wanted to talk about fish. Blind Fishing Boat. Go see him at his website and email him. If you'd like to be a guest on this show, we'd love to have you. It's very easy to do. It's Phil Parr, PHILPARR, at Consolidated, CONSOLIDATED, Consolidated.net, Phil Parr, Consolidated.net. That's our current email address that we use today, and that'll get you hold of us. Or you can give me a call at 936-634-9500. That's my phone number. And here most of the time, and most of the time I even answer the phone. Thanks for coming and joining us, and come and be a guest on the show. Don't let your shyness or your apprehension keep you from it. It's easy to do, and some folks even think it's fun. I certainly do. We'll see you next week, and don't forget about our Handyman Show. I'm Phil Parr. Bye-bye. Thanks.